Welcome to another segment of the Gay Bar Archive show, where we explore gay history one bar at a time. I'm your host, Art Smith, and today we'll be taking a walk down memory lane with DJ Doug Barnes from Peoria and Champaign, Illinois. We'll be talking about the Mailbox, the Bar, Giovanni's, Balloon Saloon, and Chester Street. So welcome to the show, Doug.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Excellent. So I understand today we're going to be talking about your memories going back to the 70s in Peoria and Champaign, Illinois.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of the episodes we've done have focused on bars in bigger cities, Atlanta, Los Angeles, San Francisco, D.C., Chicago, Boston, New York. But I think it's important that people realize that even smaller cities around the country, and you were certainly in the heart of the Midwest, had some pretty interesting gay bar experiences going back 50 years. So that's pretty cool. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your start at the Mailbox in Peoria?
Okay. I was at Illinois State University. It was 1973. And we used to go, that's in Bloomington, Illinois, 45 minutes or so from Peoria. And every weekend we'd go to Peoria. And they had this little club called the Mailbox. They had just the guy sitting up on the table playing 145 after another after another. And all my friends said, well, you know, you got a bunch of records. I said, oh, yeah, whatever. We went one weekend, and there was no DJ. So I talked to the owner, and he said, well, come in next weekend, we'll try you out. And that was the beginning of the career, just a stack of 45s and one turntable. And I put one record on, the dance floor dance, and stop and wait a minute, put the next record on. So that was the beginning of my career in Peoria.
Well, you know, at that time, that wasn't that unusual. I mean, I know a lot of bars going back to the 60s and 70s relied on jukeboxes or something
right.
for their music. They didn't even have, DJs didn't really hit the scene big until the disco era started to kick in. And then you started to see a lot more emphasis on DJs and on
right.
lighting systems and sound systems, things like that. So what was the Mailbox like? How big was the bar?
It was small. Now that I think back on it, I wish I had some pictures back then, but I mean, it was just, you'd walk in the door and one side had the bar, and you go up and there was a wall, and you go around the other side where it's the dance floor. And it really wasn't that big. I can't judge how big it was. But maybe 75 people would make it packed.
Wow.
So that was just a small little place. But at the same time, they also had a bar called Club Peoria. I think I was only there once. So we were kind of like competing.
So that was basically the entire scene in a nutshell from Peoria, Illinois was...
Right.
Was those two bars. How long were you at the Mailbox?
I was there now just maybe 4, 5, 6 months. It was just a short-term thing. But that's also where I first met Joe, who remembered me, and that's how I got connected into Champaign. So that's our little segue into that.
Now, I've never been to that part of Illinois. So how far is it from Peoria to Champaign?
Probably an hour and a half. 2 hours if you drive the speed limit.
So did you end up relocating to Champaign after the mail?
Yeah, I actually grew up in Danville, which is east of Champaign. And we would come, I was in high school, and we would come way underage to the little, it was a hotel downtown. It was called the Inman Hotel. In the Inman Hotel, there was the Crystal Room, the jukebox, and there was no dancing. I don't know how we snuck in because I was only like 16 or 17 years old. And I remember there was always a drag queen there. And she always did free to paint on the jukebox. And there was a lot of after the bars closed, the fact that we closed at one, after bar parties, big parties. And I'd go to people's houses, didn't know who they were. And that's how I also still connect up with Joe. And at the time, Ed had just started Giovanni's, and the Balloon Saloon had already been going. Jacksonville had the Balloon Saloon, Ed had Giovanni. And Joe worked for Ed at Giovanni. Then when I went after the Mailbox thing, and we met there. He kept in contact with me. And at the time, I was actually living back home with my mom. And I would believe he called me and goes, hey, do you remember me? I said, yeah. And he goes, you still have your records? I said, yeah. He goes, I'm coming over to get you. He goes, I want you to come and play with your mom. I want you to try you out. So there was my first attempt at two turns. I thought I was hooked from then on.
So after the mailbox, your first foray into the Champagne bar scene was at Giovanni's?
Giovanni.
And what was Giovanni's like compared to the mailbox?
Not twice as big. It was Giovanni's was a long, narrow bar. You walk in, the bar was on your left side. There was two full tables. If you keep on walking, the bathrooms were on the right. And there was another full table. And then the dance floor was all in the back, and he was kind of off to the side.
And was there anything fancy about it? Did they have any kind of...
Ed had red check carpet all over the walls. Tacky velvet paintings of animals and stuff. Everybody used to just cut up over the decor. But I mean, you know, it was our place to go. So we went. The outside of the building was bright red. You could not miss it. They loved red.
But there was no velvet Jesus on the wall or velvet elf.
No, just animals.
And how long were you at Giovanni's?
I was there quite a while, actually, because I was there. I was there for a while. Then I moved to Miami, and I worked at the Stonewall 2 Disco, which was the guy who ran that, also had something to do with the original Stonewall in New York. I was down there for about a year and a half. Then I went back to Champagne, back to Giovanni, and worked there. And then Jack and Bill sold Balloon Saloon to Ed. So Ed had the Balloon Saloon and Giovanni. And they were only two or three blocks from each other, walking distance. So then I started working between the two clubs. Then Joe took over as manager at Balloon Saloon, and I would switch work down there full time. We had some good times. That's where that one picture that I sent you, the narrow bar with the booths on one side and the globe lights, that was taken like where the pizza booth was towards the front. And I remember I'd be in the booth playing, and Joe would come down the aisle and he'd hit the lights. So the lights, every other one would be swinging back and forth over the top of the table. And people would just scream and holler and carry on. It was a great sound system for that day.
So Giovanni's... ultimately, and Balloon Saloon were owned by the same people eventually.
Eventually it was, yeah.
And they were in the same neighborhood. They were close to each other. Did they have a difference of the kind of people that went to one versus the other? Or
yeah. Giovanni's was more of the men's bar, and Balloon Saloon was more of the lesbian bar. But it was about half and half. Even back then, everybody was walking. They all got along so well.
That happens...
And the difference between Balloon Saloon and Giovanni's, Giovanni's was like bright red and lit up, and Balloon Saloon was a dark brown, low lighting, kind of more of an intimate type bar.
Which seems kind of odd, because the name Balloon Saloon kind of implies like a party city type atmosphere. You expect it to be colorful and bubbly and bright. And Giovanni sounds a little bit more like it should be the darker bar. So that's
I don't know where they came up with the name Balloon Saloon, but that's what it was called.
And you DJ both at Giovanni's and Balloon Saloon.
Yes. Then sometime during that period, we all went back to work to Giovanni's for a short period of time. And that's when Joe got in contact with the people who had the building where we put the bar. And I remember distinctly we were in his apartment. He goes, I got to tell you something. I was like, what? And he goes, what do you think if I open the bar? Would you come work for me? He's like, yeah. He goes, I got the keys. Let's go look. And we walked into the building. And the bar was huge. It was like three levels, actually. With the balcony all around it, with the dance floor. And we just stood up there and looked. And he goes, do you think we can fill it up? I said, we'll at least some people in here. And we had a temporary sound system and all that stuff. And we were there still because our sound system came from somewhere out east. The guy who designed the sound system in the light show eventually went to work for NASA. He was a boy. He was he was the original person with the little chips and stuff on all the lights. We had the whole light panel, and you know, you just tap the button and the lights would just go crazy. So we went in there and I said, oh, yeah, we can. Well, he got it. We opened it up. Opening night, we had something like 1,200 people and it was slam packed. And he goes, I can't believe it. And I was just DJing out of it. The bar we called it was off to the after was called the disco bar. And it was like a U shaped bar. And I just had a little turntable set up in there. So we made the sound system and put the people upstairs. And it was packed from then on.
So from the sound of it, the bar was bigger than the Mailbox, Giovanni's, and Balloon Saloon all rolled into one.
Oh, yeah.
It was a really, so was that the first major disco type space in Champaign? The bar? Right.
And during the first or second year that we had the bar, Giovanni's had a fire and it just got out of the business. So I don't know. Nobody ever knows exactly what happened, and I really don't care. All I know is we just kept going. Also, during the 5 years that we had the bar, there were several other bars that came and went during the period. At one point, we had four bars running at one time. Now we have none, which is kind of weird that we have been in that.
Yeah, because we're talking about, if I remember correctly, the bar opened in 1978 and closed in 1983.
Yeah, we had, well, it didn't close. He sold it.
And, all right.
Yeah. And then Ed came in and remodeled it, put mirrors on the walls, moved the DJ booth down to the stage. And it was all, you know, it was moving. Everything was painted white. It went red white. Because, I don't know. Ed was just one of those people. So I said, yeah, I'll work for it. So I stayed a year. And then that, after that, in 83 is when I moved to 84 is when I moved to Houston. And then Ed kept the bar up until, I was trying to think the other day how when he sold it. And I'm thinking it was about, I've been back since 2013. I think he sold it about 5 years ago. And the people who bought it went in and they were going to gut it out and remodel the whole thing. They also had a mysterious fire and never finished anything. Then they gutted the whole place out. I've actually got pictures of that. I should have sent those to you. I'll send them to you. The lights snuck in there. Everything was completely into that. It was just a shell of a building. It was really tall, but it was there. And then the back wall of the dance floor was all brick. And the building's been there since 1920. I think I've seen a picture of it was way back when. So you could see light coming through the cracks of the bricks. It was not very stable. I'm surprised it didn't fall over as much space as we had going in there. But when Ed took it over, he put the mirrors up there. The Cochran's took it over, they cut a huge hole in the back wall to get everything out, and it just weakened it. We had a huge trunk of wood in it, just knocked the wall over. It could be repaired, so unfortunately they tore the whole building down. But it's part of history that's just gone.
So you said the bar was three stories?
Well, you walked in the door, it's kind of hard to describe. You walked in, it was two entrances. The disco opened at 9. Before 9, there was a side room called, we call it the side room. That was the one of the pictures I sent that has the two outdoor lights and the bar logo on top. People would enter and out through there. And then at 9 o'clock, we'd open the other side, and that door would show up, and they would come in the other way. Walk in, there was a spiral staircase that went up to the second level balcony with a pool table and gaming area, which are pinballs back then. And then there was two other balconies that went up even further, and the booth was on one side, and there was another balcony on the other side, and then people would look over. You kind of can put it together when you look at all the pictures from different angles. So I say it was three levels because of the balcony.
Now, when Joe went in there and took over that space, did he do a lot of, you know, decorating and remodeling, or did he just leave it kind of as an open industrial space?
The only thing we did was the balconies were, and where the second level was for the culture was, there was another balcony that went across over top of the dance floor. He took that out immediately because it blocked it. So that was the only thing he did. Minimal lighting, but we had one hell of a sound system. It was incredible. It was so concentrated on the floor. You could just step off the floor and have a normal conversation. But then you step on the floor, it would hit you.
And what was the crowd like at the bar? Was it the same people that were going to Giovanni's or Balloon Saloon before?
Some, but also we're a university town. So we had all the U of I students. And when they discovered the bar, that's when it just took off. So we opened in March, which our anniversary is coming up in a couple of weeks here. Ooh, 45 years already. Ooh, that's a long time ago. So the new students kept us going. The summertime kind of slowed down a little bit. And then it would pick right back up. But we would have people that would come from Indianapolis, Chicago, St. Louis. At one point we had, there was a bus full of people. Ran the bus from Chicago, came down, parked the bus in front of the bar, and just partied all night long. At that time also, me, one of the other DJs, two of the other DJs, that had picked that black and white picture, and another friend of ours, lived above a theater that was downtown, and it was called the Art Theater. And at the time, it was a dirty theater, straight dirty theater. And we had the apartments upstairs. $90 a month for a downtown apartment. So we would open up the apartments after the bar closed at one, sometimes just have after that, after the bar closed. The night the bus was there, the bus pulled up in front of the theater. Everybody went out, they had parties. It was just always after every weekend there was a party to go to. People really did party well that day. Like I said, we closed at 1 o'clock too.
So the bar scene in Champaign at that time, the bars were required to close at 1 p.m. That was the end of the night for everybody?
Oh, yeah, that was the state.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize.
Oh, no, that can't be. Because when we go to Chicago, they were always open late. Maybe it was just a city thing. Maybe they're just a city thing.
Now, I've seen the first time I found any information about the bar was over a year ago, early in the research in this project. And the very first thing I found, which struck me as so unusual, was a picture of an ad, I guess it was, for the bar that had this kind of elaborate roller skate logo design in it. Was there an association with roller skating and that bar, or was it
disco roller making a big thing? And so we always tried everything we could. The dance floor wasn't big enough to actually for people to actually just go around in a circle off of. So we tried it for a while, and we rented the people could rent the space. It caught on for a little short time, but like I say, the dance floor was big, but it wasn't big enough to really do a roller skating thing. So that's where the roller skating actually.
Because in my mind, that's what's etched as my visual memory of what I know about the bar. And obviously, that wasn't a big part of it. That was, you know, just something you did for a while there.
But, right. It's something we tried. We tried everything. Then when New Wave hit, we were like the first ones to try New Wave night. And in one of the pictures I sent you, it said New Wave, music by the Vinyl Madness. That was a record store here. And they provided the music for a little while and tried to play it, and I told Joe, I said, you know what, let me get the music, I'll put it together. And so I still bought the music from the store, but I would play it just as if I was playing disco night, except the BPMs were like way higher. And I would walk in at 9 o'clock, and the people would be standing on the dance floor waiting for the music to stop. And then they would just like go all night long. But I would try to slip in some like disco higher, disco like Have a Cigar or something like that, but just kind of crossover for them. They ate it up. And then I start putting New Wave and disco, so it just kind of all blends together. But there was two, then we went to two New Wave nights because it was so successful.
And under that concept, with Joe at the helm, the bar lasted about 5 years.
5 years.
But the same address later became Chester Street, is that correct?
Because the bar is sitting on Chester Street. It was sitting on Chester Street.
And if I'm not mistaken, if I've done my research properly, Joe was working at Giovanni's for a while. And then when he opened the bar, obviously he left. Then Giovanni's closed. And then when Joe was ready to get out of the bar, his former boss bought the bar.
Yeah.
So he started out working for the guy, then competing with the guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Sold it to the guy.
They sold it to him.
And Chester Street, I've also seen it referred to as C Street.
That's what, yeah, it's like, because it was too hard to say Chester Street Subway. So, like, back in the day, we'd say, well, let's go to the bar, and that was our code for going to the gay bar. And that's what Joe said, we're just going to call it the bar. And the logo with the dots was a design. Ken Carls, I believe, designed it. And he won some kind of a national award for that logo.
Oh, wow. Logo.
That's why we always do it with a small T, H, E, and a big B, A, R. It's all combined together.
And all squished together like one word.
All squished together.
Like the bar. Right. The bar.
Yeah. So we went, because Joe said, well, we would call it. I said, I don't know. Let's call it. We just said, let's call the bar. We all go to the bar anyway, so we'll call the bar. And then I think there was another bar called the bar in out east somewhere. Not anything connected with us, but I do remember seeing that. It was a pretty common name for a few places.
Well, there's a lot of bars I've discovered over the years as I've researched all these bars. I think I've cataloged well over 2,000 bars now, that most of which are gone. There's a few that are still lingering around. But in the course of that research, I have found numerous bar names that have been repeated almost ad infinitum. I mean, I can't tell you how many bars were called the Zoo. I can't tell you how many Buddies there were in different cities.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Backstreet, there are at least 8 or 10 Backstreets around the country.
Oh, well, Backstreet, not to clear off too far, but I also lived in the West and went to work for Joe. He had a complex down there, which was a Backstreet. And then he cleaned it to Club Tropic. So that's a whole other thing. We'll get into that another time. So I've worked with Joe several times.
So did the bar change much when it went under new ownership and became Chester Street, or did it, other than decor, other than being repainted or whatever, did the vibe of the bar change, the crowd of the bar change?
No, it stayed. You know, I said, then I moved to Houston. My parents were still alive and living in Danville. I'd come back about every year for vacation, and every year I'd come over here to Champaign. And the first 5-6 years, it was, you know, just going. And then it just kind of started, that's when it started changing. And for some reason, Ed didn't want to say it was a gay bar. And so the gay people kind of got offended by it and just stopped going. Then I would come up, and it was just to the point where I just didn't want to go in there because it just was no fun. And Ed got to the end of where he was just tired of it too. That's what he said. But he'd been in the business since 70. He had him started to get out in 72. But I started in 73. Somewhere right around there. So he'd been in the business a long time.
Now, since Ed closed C Street, has there been anything going on in Champaign bar-wise, or?
No, as I was telling you, when we had the lived above the Art Theater and had those apartments, downtown was like dead. But throughout the years that I was in Houston, downtown really started booming. There was lots of clubs. And this one that I came back to work with Joe when we got to Fontaine was right downtown. So the downtown is booming now again, but back then it was.
Are there any gay bars there now?
No. Everybody's just friendly. And of course, we've gone on the past couple of years. A lot of those places are closed down. There was one place called Clark Bar, which is still going. She's still surviving over there. And they mostly have live bands and stuff, but everybody's welcome there. I've been there for a while. There's a few people who are still going there to check it out just to get out. So, like, say, back in the bar day, we had 4 bars going at once. It was the bar, Giovanni was still going. There was Gwen's, which was another little, like, that was a big bar. And there was another big bar called The Bat. And all 4 of them were busy all the time. They just kind of slowly all dwindled down. We just stayed the main way they were doing it.
Now, I know in a lot of cities where they have, you know, smaller towns and cities where they have a big bar, it's not open every night. Was the bar open every night, or?
Every night.
And it still stayed pretty busy most of the time. I mean, obviously.
Well, like Monday, Tuesday was a little off. Wednesday night was half price night. Then Thursday became the New Wave night, even though before New Wave night it was still busy. And then Fridays and Saturdays was packed. And then Sundays, pretty much not every Sunday, but at least every 2 or 3 Sundays, we'd have drag shows. And they would pack them in. One of the pictures I sent you is of the crowd sitting on the floor with the record stand facing the crowd. They would sit on the floor waiting for the show to start. And I just keep playing the music, and they would just keep throwing up the floor and throwing up the floor and throwing up the floor in the balcony rafters. And they ate those drag shows up. It was really, really good. The one picture I think I sent, was Joe and Jamie Lynn. She was our star. She was amazing. She was so much fun. You know, it was just, every night there's something going on. At one time we had, I don't remember if I said that picture and I'll have to go back and look, square dancers. It was when, I don't know if you're familiar, anybody will remember the Voyage album. And on the Voyage album, there was a song called Scotch something. Oh, Lord, yeah, my mind's gone. And it was a very country western, go down kind of a feel. Joe got it in his head. He had friends that were square dancers. Let's bring the square dancers in. Brought the square, they could stand open side. I stopped the music. And whenever I stopped the music, everybody knew something was going to happen. And the dance floor went empty, and the square dancers would come out. And I played that song two, three, or four times. And they just stand and dance, so then out they'd go. One night, it was Mickey Mouse's, one of his birthdays or something. I dressed up like Mickey Mouse, came through the back row, huge bunch of balloons, passed out balloons all night long. We had one time a tightrope across the dance floor with a tightrope walker that walked back and forth across the dance floor. We had the swing, which that rope was pretty thin. I'm surprised that it didn't fall, especially when we had a very regular thing. So there was, he had lots of events. So he would have, there was some guy always walking around taking pictures. That's where a lot of these pictures came from, off of slides. I still got the original slides. Joe gave me the slides. And I just kind of put them up on the screen and just took my camera and started snapping pictures. But some of them are a little blurry, some aren't. But that's where a lot of our pictures come off of old slides.
Well, and it's a good thing you have them because, you know, I've said this 1,000 times in the course of this project that, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, it was not cool to walk into a gay bar with a camera.
Right.
And B, if you did take pictures, because the cameras were not as technologically advanced as they are now, and the lighting typically in a bar is not designed for taking photographs.
Right.
And there was smoke and there was, you know, steam and sweat and flashing lights, you don't get a lot of pictures from them. And so it's really nice when you can find some pictures to capture what happened, because we're talking about, you know, 40 or 50 years ago. This is in last
month. Our anniversary is coming up, and I think now it's going to be, what, 44 years, 78 or whatever now. So, yeah, we're getting up there. And, yeah, if we'd had video cameras back then, it would be just amazing.
Or but social luckily, media. I mean, now every single person in the bar has a camera in their pocket.
Okay. And they can't get off their phones.
There are hundreds or thousands of pictures from everything that ever happens at a bar on social media. But back then, even when they were printed, you know, the magazines back then, people don't realize this. Younger people don't realize this. Right. I published a gay magazine in the 80s in Atlanta. And at that time, almost every gay bar rag published on newsprint or inexpensive white paper in black and white, crappy resolution.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't even begin to imagine how, even if you had these magazines, a lot of the pictures, if you put them online now, people would look at them and go, oh my God, you know, what is that? I can't even see it.
I had to go back and some of the pictures I sent you, I readjusted them. I made them look a little better. The two things that said soon the bar and now the opening, the slides had turned yellow. And so last night I was sitting here going, this just doesn't look right. And I flipped it over to black and white and I said, that's the way they look, the original. Joe was real big on advertising. There was Gay Chicago, and I think there was another gay magazine out of Chicago too. But Gay Chicago, that's where we had the full page ads. They did a whole big paper on it. I still got the paper in this case for Kiplin's and all. Page after page after page talking about the bar and the events and pictures and stuff. And I'm just surprised I still have all this stuff sitting around here, but I'm glad I do. And like I said, Joe had just had one guy that just almost every event, major event, just walk around the bar and take pictures. People just pose. They loved it. And that's where all the slides came from.
And it's really nice that they exist because, like I said, there's so little record of our gay bar history. And that's one of the reasons that I focused on bars for this project. There are archival projects all over the country that have every article about every riot and protest and every kind of discrimination and lawsuit and everything that happened in the gay community. But from my experience, you know, the gay community back then was about the bars. They were the heart of the community. That's where people met each other. They were, you know, they were friends, or they were, you know, be lovers, or just a one night stand, whatever it was. You went there to be with people who understood you and accepted you the way you were. Right. And it really kind of saddened me to think that so many of the bars that used to exist, people don't even know about. I mean, I'm sure in Champaign right now that there are 20-something-year-olds that have no clue that there was a place called The Bar that was really an amazing concept for a city that size to have a bar that big and that successful for 5 years. That's, you know.
And a few years ago, I got interviewed for one of the university papers. She was doing an article on clubs and DJs and stuff, and we cooked up. And also she talked to Joe. And this was something I learned from Joe, that there were gay bars back in the 60s and 50s in Champaign, quiet, out-of-the-way places. And I had no clue they were that far back in the town here. And they were down right on campus, right amongst all the students back there.
Yeah. And the truth of the matter is, from you know, the investigating that I've done, is that when you get back into the 40s, 50s, 60s, a lot of the gay bars were kind of what you would call underground. They had no sign to speak of. They very often had entrances off an alley or a rear parking lot. You know, they did not have street-facing windows, so you couldn't drive down the street and look in the bar. And you basically found out about them by word of mouth or, you know, possibly stumbling into one, which was not likely. And they were usually not in good neighborhoods. They were usually in neighborhoods that were, you know, sketchy or very industrial warehouse type neighborhoods where nobody else would be there, you know, after dark except the gay people because, you know, they wanted to not be seen. People were afraid of being seen going into a gay bar in 1960.
It
was a big thing. But I found there's several of them actually across the country. But there are several bars that have been operating as gay bars since the 30s. I know in New Orleans, there's Cafe Lafitte in Exile, which has been operating since the 33 or 34. In New York City, we have Julius, which was not originally a gay bar. I think it was the mid to late 50s before the gay people really took it over. But they're still operating in Boston. There's Jacques Cabaret, which has been there. They opened as a gay bar in 1938, and they're still operating under the same ownership today.
Oh my God. Wow.
I mean, the guy who started it, he died. His son was born right around the time the bar opened. And his son is now 83 or 84 years old.
Wow.
and his grandson, I think really more handles the operations now, but it's still owned by the same family in Boston. And they've been there for all that time.
Wow.
But it's nice to know that there were bars in smaller places too, because in Boston or New York or LA or San Francisco, you kind of expect that. You know, those were the cutting edge liberal gay havens back then. But Champaign doesn't really strike me as being that flamboyant or outrageous that you would expect it as much.
you know, that's what still gets me now. Like I say, back then, there were four bars. Now we have nothing. Times you would think there would be something going on. And everybody wants to open a bar, goes to open a little. Nobody wants to because they're afraid now of this and that. So I don't know. It's changed a lot, but I'm glad I was around and experienced it and still around it.
Well, it was a great time. I mean, it was a time when we really felt, I think, like a community. You know, The odd thing about it to me is that if you ask most gay people, and of course, let me qualify this by saying in 1975, 1980, 1985, gay meant gay men, lesbians, drag queens. There was no LGBT.
Right.
It was gay. You were a gay woman, a gay man, whatever. But going back to those days, we felt like a community. But I think if you asked a lot of the people that were around then, at that time they were saying, you know, I wish we could go anywhere. I wish I could take my boyfriend and have dinner at, you know, this restaurant downtown or this, you know, go to this shopping mall or the store and not feel like I was being stared at or judged. And, you know, fast forward to the 21st century, and we've kind of gotten to that point.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that is, I don't know that we feel so much like a community anymore, because we're, you know, some of the people are having dinner at Applebee's and other people are having dinner at Burger King as couples, whatever. They're staying in mainstream hotels. They're not hunting out a gay-owned hotel or guest house. They're just living amid society and kind of, I think the community is being diluted a little bit. You know, whereas back then, you walked into the bar and all the gay people were there. You know,
When I was in Miami and worked at the Stonewall Two Disco, it was in the 8,000 Club Resort, which was the resort, and that was amazing. That was people from all over the world coming into there. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear though. I know Champagne, you said, doesn't have anything, and maybe it will again.
Maybe.
I have noticed in the last year or so, since we got over the first hump of COVID, that there are maybe five or six gay bars that I know of that are opening or have opened. So I think some of the people are starting to see the opportunity in different cities. They're starting to say, hey, yeah, we can open a bar now and we're going to do it. And they are.
Uh-huh.
So
the ones that have been closed are now reopened.
Yeah, but there's several new ones. There's a couple of new ones in Manhattan. There's one or two in D.C. There's a new one in West Hollywood that was just opened by Lance Bass. So you're seeing some cities, you're starting to see people go back in and say, yeah, I'm going to open a new bar with a new concept.
Right.
And to some extent, it's kind of funny. It's like you were saying about you know, Balloon Saloon or whatever, that in the bigger cities, the bars were typically segregated. You know, bars tended to be either a man's bar or a woman's bar. You didn't see a lot of crossover until you got into the disco scene, and then you started to see more women mixing with the gay men. But in small towns, very often, you had more of a mixed crowd because you had a smaller population to pull from and the people knew each other more because it's a small town.
Right.
So it was more accepting of the mix. Well, what I'm seeing now is that most of the new bars that are opening as more welcoming LGBTQIA+ bars. They're not saying men only. They're not saying women only. They're not catering. They're not, you know, even without saying it, if all you ever have is male go-go dancers in your bar, you're probably saying we don't want women in here, you know, gay women in here. So a lot of the bars are consciously trying to embrace the entire community. And a few are even incorporating cafe, coffee shop type concepts to welcome, you know, the younger people, the teenagers that have nowhere to go during the day or, you know, dinner time, early evening. They can go in there and have a coffee and know that they're being accepted with other gay people. So we're seeing a little bit of a swing, but I think we might, you may see some new spaces in Champaign. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. There's always hope.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to tell us about the clubs in Peoria and Champaign and to kind of walk down memory lane a little bit with us, because that's certainly an area that doesn't get much attention.
Right. And like I said, I completely forgot about it. You mentioned Baltini, but maybe we can do a part two. And when he took over Baltini, they only had it for 2 years. And Champaign actually was having, I think it was the second gay pride party, which they'd ever had before. We were the host bar, and they had just built a new Hyatt right next to the building that Baltini was in. It was a breezeway in between. We set up a stage out the breezeway, some table, had three different drag shows all day, all night long. And the bar was we ran out of everything. And it was just an amazing time. And that was about the last hurrah that we saw.
What year was that?
That would have been, let's see, I think 2013, probably 2014. I might have to give it to Joe the exact date. We were there just for 2 years. So I think the first pride would have been, maybe it was the second or third. Anyway, we were in there and we became the host bar for it. And we were right on the main street, of course, it blocked off the entire road for the break. But that was a fun day. It was really fun. Fun day went all night long.
Well, we will definitely look forward to hearing more of your memories from Champaign, as well as I know you have stories to tell from Houston as well.
From Houston and Key West, Miami, I've been around.
We'll do a separate segment on those and let people know all about, you know, where you've been and learn about some more interesting new bars from the past.
I appreciate it. That'd be great.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
That concludes another episode of the Gay Bar Archive Show. For more information about this episode, or to find more episodes, visit GabeArchives.com.